I'm John.
And I'm Sherry.
We like home stuff.
We like talking.
And we like the occasional game show sound effect. So welcome to Young House Love Has a Podcast, where we have deep and not so deep conversations about DIY, design, and life at home.
Today we're sharing why we almost didn't buy another fixer-upper and how we've had to shift our renovation expectations many times over the past 2 months. Plus, how packing was surprisingly intense and what's keeping me sane during our move.
Well, we started last week's episode with our pods container just having gotten delivered, and we start this week with it just having been picked up.
Yeah. It was a momentous thing to see it roll out. I was like, be well, Godspeed, all the things I love.
Yes, it was a little bit more nerve-wracking than I expected it to be, because we have used a pod before when we had our floors refinished in this house just downstairs. So we had to move all of the furniture in our first floor out of the house, and we put it in a pod in the driveway. But, you know, that didn't have to go anywhere. It didn't get transported on a truck states away to a new place to be dropped down. It just sat still.
Wait, you know what I'm realizing right now? We have never not been with the stuff that we've moved ever in our whole lives.
Yeah. Every other move we've done up to this point has been basically a local move between places in Richmond. I mean, apart from moving from New York here 14 years ago. But
in a minivan. Yeah. One minivan, me and John, all of our stuff.
Yeah, it is the first time in a while that we've made an interstate move. And so when we moved from our first house to our second house and then later to our current house, our third house here in Richmond, like those are all within miles of each other. And we did like just little trips like, you know, packing the car with stuff one day, coming back the next afternoon. Like it was really easy. I think we took one truck for each move. Like we did use a U-Haul rented truck for just like an afternoon. Like it was not a big deal.
Right. And that's how we also furnished the duplex and the beach house. We rented a U-Haul once, put our stuff in it, but we've always been like the driver of our things. And it's not that I think we have any mistrust in pods driving it itself. It's just a funny feeling to watch all of your worldly possessions leave you. Like yes, they are going ahead of you. And we are here in what I have dubbed pod purgatory, because as we wait for the pod to make its way to Florida over 2 weeks, we can't get there. The house isn't ready for us anyway, and we wouldn't have any of our stuff. So we just kind of hang out in the house for 2 weeks, wait for the pod to land. And then in 2 weeks, we do the journey that the pod is doing ahead of us.
Yes. Our timeline right now is that we are hoping to make the move to Florida sometime the first week of May, because that's when the pod is scheduled to arrive there. That's when our contractor says it should be ready for us to come move our stuff in. And so that's starting to feel like the week things are going to happen. I mean, I'm knocking on all the wood because everything seems to be up in the air these days. But I think that 2 week window is another thing we didn't really wrap our heads around until recently, because again, having only done local moves before, it's always been this kind of like gradual process into the new house where if we forgot something at the old house, we could like run back and get it. But that's not really an option here. Like we have to be much more organized and basically just have one shot at getting everything packed between the pod that's going down and then what we can fit in our car when we actually go down the first week of May.
Yeah. So what remains in our house is just like, you know, the linens on the beds that we're still sleeping in, because we did sell the beds to the new owners, along with about 50% of our stuff, because that house being less than half the size of this house means we certainly would be not smart to bring 100% of the stuff in this house, because it would have nowhere to land in Florida.
Yes. There's a lot of stuff still here. I mean, I should point out we're also fortunate that because we sold so much to the new owners, that it's still fairly comfortable here while we wait out these 2 weeks before we can go. Because like Sherry said, we've got beds, we have a TV, we have a couch upstairs in our bonus room. So like, apart from having the discomfort of like not having all of our kitchen stuff and not all of our clothes, like we basically packed a suitcase that we're living out of for 2 weeks.
Yeah, but it's really not bad. No. And you know what the cool thing has been is as we've shared this stuff, we're sharing a lot of stuff as we go on Insta stories. So if you ever want like real day-to-day stuff, that's where to follow us. But as we share it, we've heard from so many people who've done these big moves, even those who are, you know, in the military or who have done these like international moves to other countries. And they have said it's fairly standard to be without your stuff for a while, sometimes 2 weeks, sometimes even 4 weeks. And so a lot of people said we do folding chairs, we do air mattresses, we do, you know, like basically camping as a way to make your food. You have like one pan and you have a hot pot and all this stuff.
I think we're glamping.
We really are glamping. We have four burner stove. Like, you know, this house has all the appliances still. We have our beds, but we do have fully empty rooms. Like I can put some pictures in the show notes of some rooms make this house look vacant and some rooms, like our entire dining room remains. Like our entire bonus room still here except for one table that we took.
Actually, I think this week on the blog, we're going to post a video tour of our house in two stages. So one will be how it looked when we sold it. So like right before the showings happened and everything was cleaned and in its perfect spot, we took a video. I haven't watched it yet, so hopefully it's good. But that will give you a sense of what the house looked like, I guess, at its finished state. And then we're going to try to shoot a video this week of what it looks like now that it has been packed up. I think that will answer a lot of questions for people who are wondering, like, what exactly did you leave? What did you take? So you'll be able to see the contrast between those two things. So that should be on the blog this week.
Yes, and we will link to the podcast we did about how we're choosing what to keep and what to send. I think some people saw some rugs and they were like, what? Why are you not taking those rugs? But previously on a podcast, I think 3 weeks ago, we'll link it in the show notes. I think it was called How Exactly Do You Downsize? Something like that. We shared this like four question process we ask ourselves. And the very first question is practical. It is, will this fit? And a lot of our big, beautiful Turkish rugs in this house wouldn't physically fit in the very small rooms of our new home. We are going from 14 rooms in this house to 6 rooms in our new house. So not only quantity-wise would it not make sense to bring all the rugs, but actually size-wise, like measurements of the room, I'm not going to bring a rug that curls up and touches the wall.
And the last thing I'll say about packing the pod, because I said it was kind of an intense process, I think it took us about 4.5 days or so to get it packed up. And that included both literally putting things in the pod, but also, you know, boxing and wrapping things in the house. So it was the actual packing inside and then also fitting it into that box out in the driveway. But the thing that made it kind of intense was this kind of double-edged sword sometimes we experience by sharing all of these processes publicly, like we were keeping people posted on Instagram stories, is that we get a lot of stories back from people who have moved or used a pod before or some other storage container like that. And so you get to hear all the like good positive experiences, but you also get to hear the horror stories.
Oh, there were some horrors.
Yes.
And I learned about halfway through, don't tell John, because John tailspins when he hears the horrors. He thinks they're all going to happen to us. I'm like, no, this is good information. Like, thank you guys for sharing what could go wrong so that we can try to keep it from happening, to mitigate it.
But you were only sharing the bad things at first. And so that was planting in my brain that like, maybe this goes wrong all the time. Like, I think we heard from someone who got a crack in the top of their pod. And so everything got wet from a rain. We heard from someone who, I guess, overfilled it and it was over the weight limit. And so when the truck came to pick it up, they said they had to like empty it partially and like use a scale to figure out if they were getting under the weight limit.
Yeah, we heard multiple people say that the door got stuck closed because I guess things can shift when the door is closed and then it can't roll back into the area that needs to be empty for it to roll up. So if like a broom or I think someone said a vacuum cleaner, someone said an ironing board like latched out.
Don't tell me that. I put our ironing board towards the end.
No, but we put cardboard in front of it. I really think everyone quote me on this. I don't want to jinx anything. I will knock on wood as I say it. But I think John did like a fantastic, ridiculously thorough job. I can't imagine anything that major going wrong. I do anticipate one or two things being broken. That just seems like if a box full of a million things goes down the country over the course of 2 weeks and it goes into like one warehouse and into another warehouse and it gets put on the ground in front of your house and then you have to open it and unpack it. Like some things will go wrong.
Yeah.
But I am not anticipating that we will not be able to open the door or that there will be a leak or any of those horror stories. I hope not. But I just think we hear from so many people. And I was making the mistake of just saying to John, like, ooh, listen to this awful thing that happened to someone.
I was getting 100% of the bad when in fact only like 3% was bad.
Right. Everyone was like, they're so wonderful. And I heard from so many people who were like, that's the only way we do it. And I think we should link in the show notes to a few things that were helpful. I did get requests from some people for a rundown. We use these straps that help you lift. I think they're called the forearm forklift.
Yes.
TM. They're like as seen on TV straps that you put on your arms. But John and I did 100% of carrying things to the pod. There are no other adults in this house. And we just like have some other tips I think we can put in the show notes for you. Just like the exact boxes we got. We got some packing blankets. We looked in a few places to find the most affordable ones. And we did use certain things for like packaging breakables. So maybe we'll link to like our 5 favorite things that helped us move with a pod in the show notes.
Sure. And also disclaimer, this is not sponsored by pods. No. I know we're mentioning their name a lot, but.
Well, they'd be really mad because we just told some horror stories.
Yeah, exactly.
Measured reporting here, guys.
Right. Well, and next up we have a game. And this week I get to be the contestant.
Okay, so someone, thank you very much, everyone who sends us things and says, make this a game, but someone emailed it to me, and I don't like to ruin it, but I had already seen the title and it piqued my interest, so I clicked it, and then I was like, I'm gonna have to quiz John because I already know the answers.
Guys, in the future, make sure it says, attention, John. Sherry, don't look at this.
That might still make me want to look at it. It's intriguing. But this title caught my eye. It was Five Things Every Adult Kitchen Has, According to These Pros, and it's on the website The Kitchen. And so I was immediately like, who are these pros that have to tell you what adult kitchens have? Because I guarantee we're not going to have all these things. And I also was like, what are the things? But I read it. So now I'm going to see if John can come up with any of them. I'm not doing what's not, where I list a bunch of things and you tell me what the faker is. I'm just going to see if you can guess three of the five.
This is why I need to do the games, everyone.
I'm a little loosey-goosey with the games.
She's like, I'm just going to look at my phone while I do it. I didn't prep.
There are not bullet points. There is no spreadsheet.
I may not even put sound effects in this.
I think you'll need them. It needs a little structure.
Okay. So you want me to guess what some of the items are that are like must-haves in a quote-unquote adult kitchen?
Yes, and I will tell you who the pros are because it was interesting to me. It was home stagers, which I was like, oh, okay. I thought it might be like chefs or something like that.
Yeah.
But it's literally like home stagers are like, these are five things that adult kitchens have in common, quote unquote.
And should I presume that this is beyond things like a sink and a refrigerator and like cabinets?
Yes. I would say that you can presume that it's decorative mostly, and it is not in fact like pots and pans. It's not very practical at all. It's just like things they stage in a kitchen, not things you actually use to cook in a kitchen,
okay.
If that makes sense.
If I stall, will you give me more clues?
Nope.
I'm stumped by this mostly decorative thing because I was going to say like a cutting board.
Okay. Do I answer you or do I wait?
I don't know. This is your game.
I will say a ding, ding, ding. But they called it something that confused me because I was like, I don't have one of these things. They called it a charcuterie board.
Oh.
But then I realized they were just talking about a cutting board. It said, not only are they functional, gorgeous slabs of wood add instant warmth and texture to a kitchen. You can like lean them up against the wall or put them on the counter, yada, yada.
Yeah.
So we are fans of this because they're functional and beautiful. IKEA sells a really cheap big one. I'll put it in the show notes. We used it at the duplex. Not only to like fill an empty wall, but it's practical.
Yeah, I guess I should have specified. I was talking about a wood cutting board because we have like a big, or at least we had before we packed, a big wood cutting board that lives permanently on our countertop. And so it's always a safe space to, you know, chop and prep stuff, but also like looks nice being left out. At least looks nicer than like a plastic one.
Yep. And it's slowly making its way to Florida right now.
Yep. I miss it.
Godspeed, little cutting board.
Okay. So I'm one for one.
Uh-huh.
Another thing an adult kitchen has. Are they going to say something like a food scale?
No, but that's cute. That would be a stager thing to add for sure. Every show house I've ever gone to that's not mine has one of those in the kitchen.
Wait. I should have said this. A fruit bowl.
That is such a good one. It's not in here, but it should be.
Okay.
This is harder than I thought. Maybe I should give you two options.
Well, because there's a lot of things that a kitchen should have. And so I'm trying to figure out what are the five things home stagers would have put in there mostly. Like, I would guess a stand mixer would look nice from a staging standpoint and also a functional kitchen standpoint. But I don't think it's a must have.
You're failing this quiz, but it might be the administrator. I will give you two options. You tell me which one you believe was in the article.
So you are suddenly converting this to a what's not game.
I'm altering the rules. Did they say matching tableware or did they say a tea kettle?
They said a tea kettle.
They did not.
Oh.
Doesn't matter how I administer the quiz.
Let's go back to the old format.
They say matching tableware. I like this sentence. It said, most drawers have one, a rogue fork that doesn't match the rest. How it got there will likely remain an unsolved mystery. But when it comes to having a well-curated kitchen, you're going to want to make sure you've got at least enough glassware and tableware for everyone and matching pieces. The thing that I found funny is it said it recommended having at least 6 to 8 settings for entertaining.
Oh.
And I was like, I don't know that we have 8. I think we have 6.
I actually know this because I just packed all the silverware. We have a plethora of knives and forks. We have probably 12 to 14 like actual like table forks. And that includes both like salad forks and regular forks. But we must have lost some spoons along the way because we only have like 9 spoons.
I blame children.
Yes. So
they're probably buried in our yard.
We have lots of...
Not the children, the spoons.
Let's be clear, everyone. We have lots of soup spoons, but like I don't use those as much as we use like regular like cereal spoons.
I actually pared down the soup spoons and the salad tongs. We had too many salad tongs to be normal.
But they all matched, so we checked that box.
Right. Okay, I'll give you two more options to choose from, and then I'll just reveal. Did they say something from the plant kingdom, or did they say dishcloths with fringe?
I think they said something from the plant kingdom, because that's not phrasing you would use.
You're right. Yeah, this is like the every room something green. I totally do that when I stage. I totally do that when I live in a house. It is really nice to have something green in the kitchen. My tip would be, don't try with the herbs. They always freaking die on me. I just do like a really easy care plant, like a pothos or an aloe. I've had luck with ivy sometimes. The thing that's nice about a plant in the kitchen is it's right next to the water source. So while you're standing there, if it looks droopy, you could just give it a splash of water.
Ivy is tougher to cook with, but...
Yeah, don't cook with any of these guys. I think they're all poisonous. Okay, so I'll just reveal the other two that they said, because so far you've gotten the charcuterie board. You were totally wrong on the matching tableware, but you were right about the plants.
Wait, I want to guess one more because I'm getting a sense of what they're going for here, okay?
Okay.
So give me a second.
Think high and low, all around the kitchen.
Oh, a rug?
Yes, a rug or a runner. That's something we have in our kitchen. We do love it. It warms things up in front of the sink. It's nice to stand on something soft. So I endorse that too. I would like to say, as a disclaimer though, I don't believe all of these or even any of these are necessary for an adult kitchen. I think there are people who have wonderful, workable adult kitchens that have none of these. These do seem kind of like fun decorative extras than necessary kitchen items.
Yeah, it sounds more like once you've checked all the functional boxes that you need, these might be some things you can add to make it a decorated space, which is kind of a secondary need in a kitchen.
Right. But I will say, like, a little splash of greenery, yeah, like a plant and a wood cutting board, those both add a lot visually. They enrich a space, they add texture, they add life. So I do believe in them in a room. I just think I've seen successful kitchens with neither of those two.
Well, didn't you say there were things on the list that we didn't have?
Yes. Yeah, so this is definitely one we never had out. The last remaining thing. I think we owned a few of these, but they were tucked away. They weren't something you like feasted your eyes on when you walked in.
Something we have, but we don't have out? You mean like, well, you wouldn't have like your can opener out.
The answer is cookbooks.
Okay.
I do see them when they stage houses. There's a little stack of them. We have found lately that we don't use cookbooks very much. I know that's really sad, but we do a lot of stuff that's just like on our phones, or we've saved recipes that way.
Yeah.
We do have like cute little binders from our families with like hand-me-down recipes on like index cards.
But you know, just like a plant is a nice decorative object to have in a space, books are also nice as even just a decorative object. And if you're going to be in a kitchen, a cookbook is nice, like on theme. So I think it does like build the atmosphere of a space to have a cookbook, even if you're not actively using the recipes in it.
Yeah. I love a real book, and I think books bring warmth into the kitchen. The funniest thing is we have open shelves in our current Richmond kitchen that I just packed up. Guess what was on there?
A cookbook?
Books, but not cookbooks. Oh. Beautiful blue books. There were three robin's egg blue books that I loved, and I stacked a vase on top of them. Never once took them down and read them because they were just books and not even of the cookbook genre.
So we kind of had all five things in there. If you put an asterisk next to cookbooks, they weren't cookbooks, but they were books near where we cooked.
Yeah. No, most of all, I was offended that like I needed to have a charcuterie board, and I was like, what am I, super fancy? And then I was like, oh, they just mean cutting board. I have one. Like, I was talked off the ledge quickly by this list once I read it and had some context.
Gotcha. Once you didn't just skim.
Well, I was like, why are we talking to stagers? Should we be talking to chefs? But then I was like, oh, then I'd have none of the things, because they'd be like, right, an emulsifier.
Right.
This is a nitrous oxygen machine. It makes your chocolate gooey. You guys can tell I watched Top Chef once.
We'll put a link to this list in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast if you want to take a look at it more closely as well.
And I have to tell you that the ad it served while I was reading this was for a bidet, so they really know us.
We also wanted to talk today a little bit about the renovations going on in Florida. I know we've mentioned them here and there. And if you saw on the blog last week, we posted a bunch of before photos of the house. So like, if you have been hungry to see photos of our Florida house, they are there in the blog if you missed them. So go check those out.
I got to tell you guys, she's a gem. Not everybody sees it, because how long was this house on the market for? It was something like...
I think you told me like 90 days?
No, 8 or 9 months.
Oh, sorry. I knew there was a nine in there somewhere.
It was like 290 or 300, something almost a year. Let's say she's like not obviously a beauty, but if you look beyond, and if you go beyond the smell, like there were some things you had to get beyond. But John and I, let's just say she's not the scariest house we ever bought. We've bought much more like dilapidated, far gone houses than her.
See the duplex.
Yes. Duplex and pink house were worse. So this one didn't scare us in the way that I guess it was scaring other people. And one of the best things about it, you guys, is the lot and the location. It's just so special. So go to the blog and check it out if you haven't seen it already.
Yeah. And we've been talking on and off about the renovations that are going on down there with our contractor. You know, we're not there in person, obviously.
Womp womp.
And we realized that it's actually been kind of a funny up and down and a almost like various phases of how Sherry and I have expected this renovation to go or how much renovating we expected to do when we moved to Florida. And I'm not talking like, oh, we didn't plan to have to gut the bathroom or whatever. I'm talking about like the general scope of how we were going to approach renovating, whether it's going to be a big renovation or a small renovation. Because it actually started off like phase one, we'll say.
The first of four phases that we went through. Rapid fire. We went through these four phases within like maybe 2 months total.
Yeah, and the first one was before we even found the house. So when we were just considering this move to Florida, we basically didn't want to have to renovate much at all. I think we were coming off of, you know, 3 years straight of renovating the beach house and the duplex, and we were in the midst, or at least the tail end, of our master bathroom renovation here. And so we had gone through so much like full gutting of spaces that part of the condition for moving, I think, for us was like, we want something that is largely cosmetic or easy fixes we could do. Like, we still wanted a project and we wanted to be able to put our own stamp on it, but I think we wanted something that we could like occupy right away and was habitable and comfortable so that we could take our time doing the cosmetic fixes.
Yeah, we knew that renovating from Richmond to something in Florida that wasn't livable would be really hard. It was hard enough in Cape Charles, and that was only like a 5-hour round trip drive. This one is more like maybe around 25 hours round trip. And so going into this, John and I were like, this is going to have good bones, good drywall. Maybe we'll redo a bathroom in the sense of like we'd redo the tile, but not like as deeply going back as we did the duplex and the pink house.
Yeah, something almost like when we bought this house that we're currently in Richmond, where like we still had to do a full kitchen renovation. We had to do bathroom renovations, but like we lived in this house just fine for years while we did things like painted and added little molding and architectural details. So like we got to put our stamp on this house plenty, but it didn't require like going back to the bones at any point.
Well, you're forgetting that it was not livable in the beginning because we had a hole in the roof, like it was actively raining into the house, and the HVAC was down.
Yeah, but those are minor compared to the beach houses.
Okay, that's true. But when we were looking in Florida, we weren't even looking for something with a hole in the ceiling and a possum living in
it,
which is how we bought this current house in Richmond, by the way. We thought this would be like, of all the houses we've ever bought, perhaps the most easy to update and easy to move right into, because the further you're going, the more it makes sense to aim for that.
Right. That was phase one.
Oh, guys, how the tides have turned. So pretend that that was your state of mind, and then pretend you're walking around Florida looking at houses like that, and pretend you don't like any of them. You're like, why am I not attracted to these? I'll tell you why. I think it's because in our hearts, John and I really like to save a house that has tons of potential but isn't there yet. And so when we're standing in houses that have already been like either brought back from the brink or were never at the brink, we are just like not maybe creatively fulfilled by them. Like, there was a house that met every criteria. It was the right size. It had bedrooms in the right places. It literally would have required ripping up a carpet and redoing a carpet and like paint.
Yeah.
And we just were like, I don't know. This feels soulless to us. Like, it felt like someone else's house.
It reminded me of when we shopped for our very first house, because I remember this moment when we were first house hunting and we were shown a house that had just been basically flipped by someone. And it was nice and it had been fairly well done. But we had this moment where we realized we could spend less on a house that was not flipped and we could do our own renovations. We could put our own stamp on it rather than paying for someone else's stamp. And so I think we kind of did that here because we saw this other house that checked all the boxes that had been nicely updated, but it did cost more than the fixer-upper. And so I think when we saw the house we ended up buying, it logistically sounded like a good deal, but also emotionally, it captured our hearts because of its potential and the ability to go through this process that we ultimately do love going through. As much as it is frustrating and tiring sometimes, like, I think deep down, we really like doing that. And plus, it was in the right location and all that stuff. So it had everything going for it.
Yes, the lot is what sold us this house. The neighborhood and the lot. It felt magical. That's the way I describe it. Like, I see something and I just know in my gut. Like, I smelled that house and it was musty. And I just was like, John, this smells like a house we buy. Oh gosh, John, we're going to buy this house. And John, you know, I'm the heart person. John's the head person. So he needed the practical understanding of how and like the, is it possible?
Right. Yeah. I think I had a hard time going from that phase one of assuming we weren't going to get into any major renovations to now seeing a house we both liked but needed lots of renovations. And so the way we got over that hump is we did have a contractor come meet us at the house while we were still in Florida. It was one that our realtor recommended. She's worked with him plenty of times on both just like small inspection item fixes to also big renovations and builds, because he also builds new houses from scratch. So we met with him, talked through some of the things we'd like to do to make sure they were possible, make sure they were within a budget we could work with. And just, you know, generally it felt like a good fit. And so that's how we sort of entered this phase two, where suddenly we have a house we love. It's going to need some major renovations. If you saw those before pictures in the post last week and you've heard some things we've talked about, like there were holes in the floor, there was one non-functioning bathroom, the HVAC needed to be redone. Like, we knew we were getting into something. And so as we got into this phase two of, okay, this house needs work, I think our expectation there was like, but we're going to go all in to get it to that place we wanted. And we're going to have all those renovations done by the time we move. And that was an ambitious goal, I think, but the contractor was confident that, like, you know, he could renovate that existing bathroom. He could add the second bathroom we needed. He could refinish the floors. He could even get us a new kitchen by June. And we thought, well, great, then maybe we will end up with this sort of only needs cosmetic fixes by the time we actually moved.
And that was the shortest phase, because after we thought about it, we were like, oh, but do we want him to like do both bathrooms without us? Like, we just like to tile things ourselves and save the money. We love to do kitchens ourselves. So when we got the quote for what it would be for him to do the kitchen, of course, it's much more in labor. So that was a very short-lived phase wherein we were suddenly like, okay, back to the drawing board. What if he gets it livable? So like fix the holes in the floor, fix the HVAC, get the bathroom so that the toilet flushes and it's on sewer.
I think we went from at the point of purchasing the house, like when we put the contract in, assuming we would have the contractor do almost the maximum amount of work before we moved in, to over that like 30 days while we went through the closing, because, you know, even if you put in a contract, you don't actually own the house. We couldn't start any renovations. I think by the time it was actually time to start work, like once we owned the property, we had come way down to almost wanting him just to do the minimum, like just get things working so that we can come in there and do the rest ourselves, or at least be there in person to guide the process. And so I think that's our phase three, where there was very little renovation going on before we moved, apart from getting it livable. And part of that would be done by us. Like, we had planned that trip over spring break to do tiling in the bathroom. And we had also assumed that, you know, at some point, maybe in May or early June, you and I, just the two of us, would go down for like a long weekend to check in on things. Like, we had planned to sort of be more involved over these last few months in person. But obviously, that all kind of fell apart when the pandemic hit and everything got locked down. And I think that's where we transitioned to phase four, which is where we are now, which kind of ended us somewhere between the maximum and minimum.
Yeah. Do you have whiplash yet? Because we like doinga, doinga, doinga between 2 points, and we ended up pretty much in the middle. And you know what's funny is it feels almost exactly where we ended up with the pink house and the duplex, which is that we hired a contractor because it was a faraway renovation, and he did a lot of the systems. Like, we hired this contractor in Florida. He did the HVAC through one of his subs. He did new plumbing, which we didn't even know we needed, but then learned we needed it. Oops, all the drywall was bad. Had to redo the drywall. It was very similar. That's the irony. We were like, we don't want to do what we did for the pink house and the duplex again. Fast forward to that's exactly what happened.
Well, we didn't have to replace the electrical.
Yeah, or the roof.
Yeah.
Thank goodness. So we have two things that went well for us.
Or the siding.
Yeah, that's true. The siding is beautiful.
There's a lot we didn't have to do, but it still was more than we expected.
Right.
Because like, he's doing that entire bathroom, that bathroom that we wanted to tile over spring break, he is now doing entirely. It had to be gutted because of the leaks. And so by the time we get there, it's going to be pretty much all redone, like with a new vanity, new toilet, new tub, new floor. Everything's going to be new in that bathroom. So that's more than we expected. But we're not doing other things, like he's not touching the kitchen really at all. He's not building that second bathroom that we need to add. Like, we're going to hold on those things because we can still live in the house without those things done. So we can sort of hold on them until we actually live there and can manage them in person and do some of them in person.
Right. So to everyone who has said, will you talk a little bit more about, like, is this just going to be finished when you move in or just like a few more months of work? We are fully anticipating years of work. Not only are we adding a master bathroom and closet, which does not exist on the house, we are going to do a phase one of the kitchen when we land. It has mauve countertops. It has old appliances. It doesn't have a soffit anymore, which makes me happy. It used to have this really bad soffit going through it. But generally speaking, we are going to feel like we're living in a house that has some updated spaces and some that are not updated at all. And we're going to get our hands on those. We're going to probably do a number of built-ins and smart storage type things. And then remember, we're definitely adding a pool. That was one of our like must-haves when we were house hunting, and a little guest house shed Mac Daddy outbuilding that John cannot wait to get his hands on. And then we will have many projects within that.
Yeah.
We also anticipate things like a pergola or like an outdoor shower. We want to make a little private patio off of our bedroom. So like there is not a corner of this house, I think, that we're not going to touch. Like we have many, many plans. So even though it might look like on Instagram, oh my gosh, they're ripping it apart and they're saying it's going to be ready to move in. Ready to move in just means we're all sharing one bathroom that works.
Yeah.
And it's livable. It no longer has holes in the floor and there is air conditioning and I can flush the toilet.
Yeah.
But it does not mean that it's like a beautiful finished house by any means.
Yeah, I think we're mostly getting it to blank slate, like almost the point that we wanted to find a house in where it was comfortable to live in. It was habitable. It needed mostly just cosmetic fixes. I mean, like Sherry said, there's still some big major things that have to happen, like adding that bathroom and renovating the kitchen eventually. But those things we can take our time with, which is, I think, the spot we wanted to be in. We didn't want to be forced into a rushed renovation the moment that we land, because I think we are underestimating the amount of energy it's going to take just to get settled in a new place. And so we want to be sure that the house we are living in is a comfortable, safe place to be in while we adjust to being Floridians.
Right. I feel like we have many years to slowly explore things and figure out exactly what we want space-wise. And I actually think having a smaller house allows you to be super thoughtful about that stuff. We don't have all the space in the world to slapdash and throw everything all around. We have to be really like focused about what we can gain from each room, how we want to use each space. And so we really want to give ourselves time and not rush anything. But of course, we will take you along for the ride. So we all have that, I think, to look forward to. And we are looking forward so much to just being in there so we can share videos all the time and we can record this podcast from in the house.
It's probably going to be as echoey there as it sounds here now, because now that we've emptied out part of the office, I feel like my sound quality has gone down.
John put in his earphones and he was like, I can already hear it. It's already too echoey.
I know we can do better if we had all of our stuff. Oh, and I was going to say that I think people forget that we have not been to this house in person since early February, and that was our only visit to it. We went there one afternoon for probably about 30 minutes when we were initially house hunting, and then the next day for like 2 hours when we met with the contractor. But apart from that, like, we haven't seen this house except for, you know, photos and videos from the contractor. Like,
yeah, I FaceTimed with him today. I love, love, love when there's a FaceTime call from him because I'm like, oh, I'm going to get to see pictures. Sometimes, guys, I even screen record it so I can watch the FaceTime back later. I have told him that I'm doing it. It's never his face. It's always my goony face in the corner staring and him showing the house like the camera's flipped. So he's really good at keeping us posted. We are really good at being very thorough clients.
Thorough is a nice way to put it.
I did ask him if we're the worst. And just like Sean Ingram, do you guys remember our contractor from Cape Charles? He said, like, I've had way worse. That was literally like Jared's response. Jared's the new contractor. He was like, no, I've had much worse. Which I'm like, that's like a midpoint compliment.
Right, exactly.
I'm in the middle.
That's an insult disguised as a compliment.
You're not the worst I ever had.
That's also another way of saying could be better.
You're average.
I win some, I lose some with you. Okay, and actually this week we're going to dive right into We're Digging, because I am digging a book that we have been reading with our children, but I have been enjoying it quite thoroughly. So this book was a birthday gift to our son, and it's called The 50 States. It's a big, flat, would you call it a coffee table book?
It's probably, it's like a big board book for kids.
Yeah, but it doesn't have board pages. But it is beautifully illustrated, and it's basically full of maps and facts, which are like candy to me.
And our son. They're both the same. They love the like atlases and like factoid boxes. They love a key.
Yes, but this one is so beautifully illustrated. It's, I guess, written and researched by Gabrielle Balkan and illustrated by Saul Lanero. And I'll put a link to it in the show notes. But it is just not only a really pretty book to look at, but on each page, it is crammed with little icons and facts and fun tidbits and famous people from each state. And basically, my son and I read one spread per night so that we can really dive into each thing. And he'll like point to an icon and ask what it means. And so I have always been a map nerd, and I'm glad to see that I'm raising a little map nerd. But it just is not only fun to look at, a fun activity together, but it's also like there's lots of things I'm learning about. It's making me excited to travel again. I mean, obviously not right now, but when we can, when it's safe to, because we're going to be living in a slightly new area of the country for us, and we're going to be closer to places I haven't really spent much time in. Like, I'm reading all these fun facts and like places that we could possibly go on family weekend trips and stuff. And so I just think this is not only a beautiful book and a interesting book, but I think if you need something these days that takes a lot of time to go through and you can really kind of savor each page, it is good for both kids and adults.
I like the illustrations. I think it's beautiful. You could totally frame these things in a room, by the way. It is like art.
Yes.
Beautifully done.
I feel like you guys deserve a fun fact from this book. I'm going to find one right
now. Okay, here we go.
Well, the one that stuck out of my mind last night from Delaware is that, did you know the Delaware Bay is home to the largest population of horseshoe crabs in the world?
Who knew?
Who knew? Aren't you a better person for knowing that?
When I grew up, I feel like someone told me that New Jersey was responsible for like a really huge percentage of all the eggplant in the world.
Here, I'll find a New Jersey fact, okay? New Jersey.
Legend has it that saltwater taffy was created when a storm flooded the Atlantic City candy store in 1883.
Who knew?
Fascinating.
Look at this. Glowing rocks. The Rainbow Tunnel at the Sterling Hill Mining Museum houses huge fluorescent minerals.
You guys know I love crystals.
Yep. And you're from New Jersey. You didn't even know that.
It's perfect.
So anyways, like I said, I'll put a link to it in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast if you'd like to check it out.
And I feel like lately I've been digging things that are not things. They're like abstract concepts that you may or may not have in your life. I'm just digging this thing because it's happening to me right now. And it's making a major move at the same time that some of our best friends are making one. We are literally moving and like having a lifestyle change, not just like moving up the street in the same neighborhood. Within 7 days of one of our closest friends, her husband and her three kids are doing the same thing. They're not going as far mileage-wise, but they're totally changing lifestyles. They're changing school districts. Like, it is going to be a whole new environment and a new, like, way of life, even.
They're going from the suburbs out kind of to the country a little bit, a more rural location.
Yes, it's a house on a lake. It's many, many acres, so they will be, like, maintaining the land and planting a vegetable garden. And it has just been such a gift and an unexpected one to get to do this at the same time as them. Like, they actually told us they were moving before we made the decision to look into the Florida thing. And we were shocked when they told us. We just thought they'd live in our neighborhood forever. And they probably thought we'd live in this neighborhood forever too when they told us. And then I think from knowing that they were like brave enough to make this big change, it was not the only factor, but it was certainly something that helped us feel like maybe we could make a big change too.
Yeah, I think having this somewhat parallel experience with them has made us feel less alone in the fact that we're like going through a big transition. I mean, the fact that we were selling our houses around the same time, we're packing around the same time, we'll be getting settled in our new homes around the same time. Like, it's just nice to have someone else who's going through it at the same time.
Right. I think like right now everyone's kind of feeling isolated, and it's even weirder to try and find someone who feels like they're doing the same thing because it's like the middle of the pandemic and we're moving. So that's why I love when I hear from you guys at home who have done it. And I'd love just talking to them like at night when we're sitting on the couch. It's so nice to hear like, oh my gosh, our house is a disaster. They're like, same, we packed up our closet today. Like, it's so nice to hear that we're all in chaos together. Thanks for listening to Young House Love Has a Podcast.
Yeah, seriously, thank you. We know so many of you have had your routines disrupted these last several weeks, and maybe you no longer have your commute or those casual grocery trips when you used to tune into our show. I know I've fallen behind a lot of my podcasts, so we're extra appreciative that you've made us part of your day today.
Yes, and keep telling us what you do while you listen. Like Kristen on Instagram, who tried listening while packing up boxes to move out of their first house, but kept having to replay it because she couldn't hear us over the crunching of the bubble wrap and the paper packaging.
The struggle is real.
We can relate.
And over at younghouselove.com/podcast in this week's show notes, we've got links to some of those helpful moving supplies and a look at our fully packed pod.
And a sneak peek of some of the empty rooms in our house so you can see how we're living for the next couple weeks.
Later.
Bye.
Testing.
It's been a long time. We shouldn't have left you without a dope beat to step two, step two, step two. Freaky, freaky, freaky.
Okay, I think the mic works just fine.
What would you say?